and welcome to the GlobeStreet.com Philadelphia Market Podcast. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin, Philadelphia editor for GlobeStreet.com. With new developments, redevelopments, and construction projects underway, Philadelphia is experiencing an exciting period of growth. As the perceptions of Center City's boundaries change, the Center City Proprietors Association is organizing periodic Meet the Developers panels so that business leaders can hear from some of the city's innovative developers, builders, architects, and engineers. These are the people who are the real visionaries driving changes to Philadelphia's skyline and expanding neighborhoods. We recorded this panel on March 27th, 2019 at the Pyramid Club in Center City. We'll be back with the panel after this message from our podcast sponsor, the book, The Business of Podcasting.
Turn your podcasting passion into profits. The book, The Business of Podcasting, describes the business side of podcasting, including how to become a professional podcaster. You'll learn about positioning your clients' expertise through podcasting, too, plus the best business models, how to find clients, and much more. Visit TheBusinessOfPodcasting.com.
We're back at the Pyramid Club, and let's take a look at who's on the panel today. The moderator is David Nassetier, the vice chair of the firm and chair of the business and finance department at Obermeyer, Rebman, Maxwell & Hippel. The panelists are Anuj Khosla, managing partner of Khosla Properties, Charles Norman, development manager of National Real Estate Advisors, Richard Olaya, principal of Olaya Studio, David Schultz, president of DAS Architects, and Shalimar Thomas, executive director of the North Broad Renaissance. At the lectern to introduce the panel program is Ben Frank, executive director of the Center City Proprietors Association.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Meet the Developers. My name is Ben Frank. I'm the executive director for Center City Proprietors. Welcome to the Pyramid Club. In 2018, CCPA had record attendance at each of our event series, and so far this year we're continuing the trend. This sold-out attendance is wonderful to see. Thank you for your continued support of CCPA and for the programming we offer. Please remember we are a member and sponsor-supported association, so if you're not a member, please consider joining today. And if you'd like to sponsor one of our event series, just find me afterwards. A few exciting events we have coming up. First of all, save the date for the next Meet the Developers, which is June 6th, and that'll be at the Philadelphia Inquirer building at 8th and Market. Next Tuesday, we have a very special luncheon with five of the business owners behind Philadelphia's most iconic cheesesteak shops together on a rare panel for the next lunch with the city's leaders. That's April 2nd. And then we're back at the Pyramid Club May 2nd for Cinco de Mayo networking party with Pyramid Club members. And of course, the full schedule is on centercityproprietors.org. I do want to acknowledge Michael Craig and Lauren Kagan of Penworth Financial, CCPA's preferred benefits provider, and our sustaining sponsor, WeWork. The Meet the Developers series is a collaboration with our partnering organizations, so we want to thank and welcome the members of BOMA Philadelphia, Building Industry Association of Philadelphia, CREW Philadelphia, General Building Contractors Association, IFMA Greater Philadelphia Chapter, and NAOP Philadelphia. And of course, thanks to our sponsors, the Pyramid Club for hosting us, Freeman LLP, Obermeyer, Rebman, Maxwell & Hippel, ServPro, TD Bank, and our newest sponsor, Domus Construction. And please welcome Scott Zuckerman of Domus Construction.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you for the opportunity to be a sponsor and to be part of this event. Domus, for those people that don't know us, is a local general contractor. We've been in operation since 1976. We most recently completed the Divine Lorraine and the Met, although our portfolio work starts with low-income housing projects, affordable housing, restaurants, banks, education, and we're doing a large modular project in Northern Liberties and 4601 Market Street. Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. And now it is my pleasure to introduce CCPA board member Suzanne Spinell-Schuster. Suzanne is director in charge of accounting services at Freeman LLP. Suzanne?
Good morning, everybody. We always get such a wonderful, wonderful turnout, and practically every seat is filled today. So I welcome you this morning. I am Suzanne Spinell-Schuster, director in charge of accounting services at Freedman LLP. As a CCPA board member, I am also on the sponsorship committee. So if your company would like to become a sponsor, please let me know. Freedman LLP has been serving the accounting, tax, and business consulting needs of public and private companies since 1924, with offices in Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York, and Beijing. The real estate industry's propensity for rapid growth and change continues to generate new challenges. Our real estate practice works with owners, developers, contractors, real estate investors, institutional owners and lenders, property management companies, and brokers to address the complexities of this ever-changing industry and the new tax law, and to capitalize on new opportunities. We are thrilled to sponsor this event and to hear from our panel of experts. And now it is my pleasure to introduce today's moderator. David Nasseter is the vice chair of Obermeyer, as well as the chair of Obermeyer's business and finance department. David's clients range from small family-owned businesses to some of the largest financial institutions in the United States. His diverse and extensive experience includes providing counsel to clients on public finance, both governmental clients and private sector clients seeking access to public finance opportunities, as well as zoning and general corporate and real estate issues, including handling the workout of complex financing projects and structuring of multi-million dollar real estate developments. His full biography and those of our panelists are in your program. So please join me in welcoming our moderator, David Nasseter. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Suzanne. It's times like that. I wish my parents were here. My mom would have loved that introduction. My dad might have believed it, so thank you for saying that. It's a pleasure to be here today. I always enjoy this panel because, as you can tell, I'm a real estate deal junkie like so many people in the room, and I love to see what is happening in our region. It's an exciting, active time, and it continues to be a real job generator and growth generator in the region. So I am very appreciative to have the opportunity to be here today, not only to participate, but also to hear what our fine panel has to say. Today's panel is actually very exciting. We've got several developers as well as some folks in the business, whether they're architects or promoting a growth in certain regions of the city. So I find it to just a fantastic opportunity to, for us to learn about what it is that is making certain areas in Philadelphia grow as opposed to other areas, and in general, why the growth is happening in here. The first thing I'm going to ask our panel to do is I'm going to ask you each to give a sort of a short elevator speech, 30 seconds to a minute, about what you do and what your company does in the role of real estate development, and maybe touch on a key top project that you're working on. Can I start with Anush to start?
Hi, everyone. My name is Anush Khosla. I'm the founder and managing partner of Khosla Properties. We are a small-scale real estate development firm here in Philadelphia. We primarily focus on mixed-use and multifamily projects in the up-and-coming neighborhoods, such as Brewerytown, Fishtown, Kensington, and parts of West Philly. A project that we're really looking forward to breaking ground on is in Fishtown. It's a 17-unit mixed units building on the 1400 block of East Columbia.
Great, thank you. Charles.
Hey, good morning. My name is Charles Norman. I'm a development manager with National Real Estate Development. We're a developer based here in Philadelphia. I've been working on the last 4 years East Market, which is our large development on Chestnut Street, between Chestnut Street and Market, 11th and 12th. It's a full block. 6 development sites, and we just finished our first 3, so we're halfway through the development.
Great, thank you.
Good morning, my name is Rich Olaya. I'm an architect with Olaya Studio. It's an architectural design firm. We're based in West Philadelphia since 2006. We work with real estate developers, we work with universities and with religious nonprofit groups. We just finished working on 3675 at Wexford with Science Center, and we're starting a new 14-story tower over there. We're also working on the religious side. We finished the first purposely built mosque in North Philadelphia, just off of Broad Street. And so we have our hands in various different types of products.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Dave Schultz. I'm a partner in DIS Architects. We founded the company in 1990. We're a boutique firm of 20, and we're a blended firm of architects and interior designers because we believe in a holistic approach to our projects. And we have a number of projects in Center City, Philadelphia right now, about a half a dozen towers, some residential, some hotel, which I can get into in, I guess, a little later. We also have about half of our projects are outside the area, up and down the East Coast. We also have a sister company called Studio Das that's a full-service procurement firm, which allows us to procure specialty millwork, custom items, lighting, all those special things we can get into our projects at a discounted price for our clients. Thanks.
Shalma.
Good morning. First, thank you, CCPA, for allowing me to serve on a panel today with the Northborough Renaissance. We're a special service district supporting revitalization efforts along North Broad Street from City Hall to Germantown Avenue. We focus on keeping North Broad clean, green, and safe, and also moving forward efforts for strategic business development and business attraction. And we also are responsible for the upgrades and managing the North Poles, the light mast down the middle of North Broad. Thank you.
Thank you. What a great panel. Let's dive right in. Ooh, sorry about that. Let's dive right in. Shalmar, I want to ask you first, because I think the question is in my mind is, what does the word development mean to you? Let's ask everybody that question. Start with you. What does the word development mean to you in terms of how it relates to the specific role you play in the process?
I would say for me, development means change. And understanding what that change means kind of guide us in the process of how we manage that change. So an example of that is everyone loves that North Broad is growing, and well, not everyone. there's a huge population that loves that North Broad is growing and that you have an increase in population. You see stores and, oh, a CVS is coming to Broad and Spring Garden, and now I can just go and run and pick up my prescriptions on my lunch break, or I have somewhere to go for lunch. So you have those stories, but you also have the stories of, well, what does this mean for me? What does this mean for as a resident? What does this mean as a business who's renting? Am I even paying attention to that? Am I even aware of how these changes could impact me? So the Northborough Renaissance role is just in that process is making sure the community understands this is coming. And so you can get excited, but on the other hand, also keeping the community informed.
Great. Dave, what do you think?
Development to me means growth. And when I think of the word development, obviously I think of developers. Developers are the folks with the vision and often the passion that goes into creating something new, to building something, renovating something, or improving something. But ultimately, they're the visionaries and they're the entrepreneurs and risk takers that make it happen. And we try to facilitate their vision and help them create, you know, help them match their goals, hit their target markets, and all of that.
Rich, please.
So to me, development means opportunities to revitalize the urban fabric that we live in. So most of my work is in Philadelphia and in urban environments. And so development includes the idea of making the entire area better one project at a time through buildings and through revitalizing properties And so we take that very seriously and very passionate approach about wanting to make the entire area better through one building, through not just building rentable square feet, but through making the connection with the pedestrian, the connection with how the building engages the street and the environment around it. So to me, development means all those types of opportunities.
Charles, please.
Great. So I agree with everything everyone said so far. I think one of the things I think about is it's really about a commitment to the community. When we develop, it's not just to get in, do our projects, and get out. It's a long-term commitment. Our parent company typically holds these projects for 10, 20 years. And so what we're looking at is really assessing the market, getting our development done and getting it operational, but then really making it part of the community. So making, you know, activating the space, engaging with the community, making sure that the project works in the long term. So it's not a four-year project for us. It's more like a 20-year project to do what we want to do when we undertake a development.
Finish, please.
Yeah, I would like to agree with everyone just said, but just to add to that, development to me means progress. And something that we work on in all our projects is incorporating technology and kind of pushing the limits as far as what can we do from an experiential standpoint for our potential tenants. Trying to create a platform where the tenants can control everything in the apartment and in the building just through one seamless app, and kind of pushing that technology boundary.
I wonder if there's an inherent conflict, though, between what Charles and Anuj just said versus the rest of the panel in terms of developing a site versus trying to preserve certain values in the site or in the community. This is for anyone on the panel. Is there a sense of inherent conflict if you're an architect or you're someone that's promoting a special service district to try and preserve what is in that community versus, candidly, the developer needs to maximize dollars to make a profit to make a project work? Anyone ever come across that tension, or is that just in my mind?
All the time.
All the time. Well, that was a simple question. Anybody else want to add something?
I would say yes, it happens, and the reason that it happens in my experience is just that you don't make that connection early enough to understand what the needs and challenges of both audiences.
How does anyone overcome that, then? Let me ask Anuj and Charles that question. How do you overcome that? You got to make a dollar. We're all in this for business. The other folks on the panel are trying to preserve a community, improve a community, revitalize it. How do we make it work?
I'm going to try and tackle this. I don't think it's about taking out an eraser and you know, removing what's there. It's about understanding what the underlying attributes are of the neighborhood and really adding to it. With our project at East Market, we really saw our particular site as like the hole in the donut. We had the convention center to the north of us. We had a really vibrant, resurgent Midtown Village neighborhood just to the south of us. And we saw everything that's going on east of Broad, and we said, we've got a great site here. We're gonna redevelop this block, and our sincere hope is that, in 5 to 10 years, no one really understands that this block wasn't like this 20 years ago, right? That people walk down Ludlow Street, walk down Clover Street, walk down Chestnut Walk, and really feel like this has always been here. It's of this place. The people who are from the neighborhood are taking advantage of it. They're living there, they're working there, and it becomes part of the fabric.
Fair enough. Anuj, you want to add anything to that one?
Yeah, just to kind of go over the first point, I think it's important to also recognize scale. When you're doing, smaller scale projects, it's tougher for you to impact the fabric of that neighborhood. But as far as what we've done, so we have a 32-unit project in Brewerytown that required about 5 variances. So what we did is we took a proactive approach and engaged with the community and the RCO to kind of figure out what they wanted. So we presented our project to them on an unofficial basis, got their feedback, incorporated it into the projects. Also, we did some community outreach through some educational programming and also through sponsorships of OSHA 10s, which is a certification and training program that allows the potential candidates to work in the construction and manufacturing industry. So we just think being proactive and trying to be a member of the community is a good approach.
That's a great answer. All those are great answers.
Can I expand on my
Please,
first
absolutely.
One-word answer?
You should quote me right ahead. I'm with you. Go ahead. Go ahead. Absolutely.
You know, I guess think what we love about Philadelphia is it's so contextual. It's historic fabric. It's neighborhoods. It's walkability. And I think there's a way to do modern buildings that are still contextual that actually fit the scale and the spirit of the community without ruining it, without dropping something in from above that doesn't belong there. So I think there's sites where there isn't such a contextual issue that are parking garage sites and some of those sites, but the really neighborhood sites need to be very delicately treated. So I know that that's often complicated, but I think developers can do this successfully like is done in Europe, where they restore portions of existing buildings and build sensitively around them.
Thank you. That's a great, great answer. I want to follow up a little bit on that as well, though. I'm curious, what are the biggest incentives or drivers to redevelop in the city? And conversely, what are the biggest challenges to redevelop in the city that you each face, either as developers or professionals? And I'm thinking, for example, you mentioned a new zoning, so I think of civic associations. I'm curious about labor and the impact of labor and labor costs, zoning, getting zoning relief, specific laws or changing ordinances. What have you confronted or what do you as a consultant suggest or help to navigate the way so we can actually have a redevelopment of a certain area? You want to start with Anoush? Go ahead.
Sure. Just to kind of touch again on the zoning. So I think there's a kind of like a gap between the zoning code and the building code. We realize certain things with like roof decks and the access structures to the roof decks, there's some, they don't match. The zoning code and the building code don't match. As far as just getting approvals, we've really felt like in the last, you know, maybe 2 years, it's been a lot tougher and a lot longer to get all the approvals we need for our projects versus in the past.
Okay. Charles, please.
We've had a great relationship with the city and the state, and it's really been helped facilitate East Market. Between RACP funding, our city easement agreement for the public space that we're creating, all those have really been fundamental to the success of East Market. Also, our digital signage is a huge draw and very important to our
sure.
financial pro forma. I look at the challenges. I think that the challenges that I see moving forward are frankly, construction costs. We're seeing escalation. We're at the top of the market, or I think nearing it. And so that's becoming a really important issue as we move forward. And then the second thing that I think is important is when, as a developer of mixed use and residential projects, it's really understanding how housing is changing. We're you don't just build apartments anymore. We have a tremendously segmented apartment market where people either want senior living and they want co-living, they want a normal studio. That's really changing here in the late 2010s. I think the next decade is going to be very different.
Rich?
So I see two issues come up again often. One is the discussion about context and how much development is happening at such a rapid rate in the city right now that there is that not enough thought is being put into how these buildings look in their surroundings, not necessarily needing to be traditional because I'm all for contemporary architecture, but just giving buildings more thought so that their context and their surroundings are compatible. So that's one issue that I see that's happening time and time again. There's a lot of criticism about the generic quality of a lot of the real estate development work that's happening in the city. The second piece is cost and the shortage of construction trades that are in the city. We're just as expensive as New York when it comes to construction costs. Yet the rents here are, I don't know, one third or one fourth of what you would see in New York City. And so there's a huge disparity, which makes it really hard for developers to make those pro formas work, which is why then developers maybe don't put the level of materials and quality into some of the finishes that we would like to see as architects. So those issues kind of go hand in hand, and I think that we need to figure out how to come to terms with all that.
That's a great answer. Thank you, Rick. Dave, please.
To touch on the zoning subject, I would say because Philadelphia is a big city, there's a process that's pretty well defined for gaining approvals. It's pretty clear. We've worked in other cities where it was really much more complicated and more political. And we have, I think, a very good planning commission here, which can be a real advocate for projects that they feel are really good projects. And we work closely with the planning commission on a lot of our projects. So what I like about Philadelphia is the fact that it's, I think it's a clear, honest process. What's tough for developers is the neighborhood associations, the CROs, that have a fair amount of clout when it comes to getting things approved through the zoning process. So there's a lot of give and take, and that's probably a good thing that there's all that give and take. I will ditto on the construction costs. It's killing a lot of projects. Right now, construction costs are seemingly out of control. We're involved with several center city high-rises, and we're just going in for permits, now going into the bid process, and we're hearing just crazy numbers. One thing we are looking into is we're looking into center city modular construction, which has been happening in Europe, which we think will help save on labor costs and give us a good product and help facilitate some of the logistical problems with conventional construction in downtown areas.
I want to follow up really quick before we jump to Shalimar on that question, David. You mentioned costs going up in modular. Have the tariffs had any impact, do you think, on the cost of steel and other products that are impacting projects to the point that it's killing projects, or is it just a hindrance?
I've heard that the tariffs are causing the steel prices to go up, but the steel prices were going up anyway. So I don't really know the complete answer to that. It seems to be labor costs primarily, and the material costs are also inflating.
Thank you. Shalimar, please.
I think for me, the biggest challenge right now at this stage is just understanding it all. So we, in this role of community development, we throw around the term stakeholder. And I always get the question, well, what's the stakeholder? And for me, it's everybody. It's everybody on North Broad. And trying to figure out what's important to this stakeholder and what's important to this stakeholder and what's important to this stakeholder and understanding it all, that's the biggest challenge. So I'll give an example, and I know Domus is here. When I did a tour at the Met, when it was still under construction, I mentioned earlier that we have a greening program. We have 61 planning beds that we maintain along North Broad Street. And when I went to the Met, it was still under construction. I remember walking past, we had some planning beds in front of the Met. And I remember walking by and it was like dirt and construction debris all in the planters. And I was like, oh. And so after the Met was done and the pavement was done, the planters were removed. But I also remember talking to the folks who did that, and they needed that space, that sidewalk space for traffic, because they knew the venue would get so much foot traffic, and the planters kind of, defeated that purpose. So if we had that understanding before we put the planters down, we wouldn't have put the planters down. We wouldn't have used the resources. So having just an understanding of how these things play a role in overall community development, talking to developers, understanding that construction cost is going up. So how do we control this conversation around affordability and gentrification? And how do we address that? So get it in front of the conversation earlier to get a clear understanding so we can move forward in a progressive manner.
I want to follow up on that question, too. I can't help myself, so I apologize in advance. Shalimar, this is for you, and actually I want to ask Charles the same question. Everyone else can chime in, too. How do you incentivize someone to come to North Broad to make it happen then? Like, what do you do to get them there? You talk about some of the complaints you had, legitimate complaints, but then on the flip side of the coin, you're trying to bring a major investment to the neighborhood. Charles, same question, but a little different for you. How did you decide you were going to go to a site that was the hole of the donut to make it work? Sure. So you want Shalimar to go first?
Yeah, the answer is super short, and I learned this through trial and error. We just asked them. We just asked.
Fascinating concept. Okay.
What would it take? And then we see if we could do it.
But does that mean you go to your city councilman for help, person for help?
It may mean that. It depends on the answer, right? So it could be tax incentives. It could be, hey, I just need some financing with moving costs. We may go to our banking partner and say, hey, can we create a grant program so we can provide incentives for businesses to move? You know, it depends on the answer. So great, we
great.
Ask.
Great. Charles, did you ask?
So We have three local partners here in Philadelphia that brought this project to us, so working with SSH and Joss Realty and Young Capital. And so they remain equity partners in the project. And so back in the early 2010, 2011, they had this site, they had control of it, and they were looking for a partner. And so they brought the project to us, and it was, and we saw the potential. We saw just the great fundamentals that I described earlier, the transportation connections, the convention traffic, the resurgent Midtown Village. And we're national development and national real estate advisors around the country looking exactly for those types of sites. Sites that are in up and coming neighborhoods where long-term play is possible and we can really help transform a neighborhood.
But obviously you did get some help from the state and otherwise as well. So tell me about that process. Does that make it a deal? Was that a deal break point? You needed those incentives, or were they there and you just took them because they were there?
Yeah,
it was a deal anyway.
No, I think those partnerships with the state and with the city and the RACP funding, our city easement funding, really fundamentally important to making the project pencil. We wouldn't have done it without it, to be honest.
Okay.
So those partnerships are incredibly important to make a project like this work, especially our first phases. We did some things with, we took all of our services, our loading dock, our trash, and we put it all underneath the site. We couldn't have made that investment if we had not had the funding that we got from the city and the state.
Great, thank you. I'm curious, David and Richard, especially in your roles, not necessarily as the developer, but playing a key consultant, are you looking for those types of opportunities? Do you get called upon to try and find, as Charles described, the need to put something underground? Oh, there's a program, I think I can call somebody, or is that not really a role you're comfortable playing?
No, we play that role every day. So as an example, we just finished working with Wexford at the Science Center. We finished 3675 Market Street, so that's a 12-story, 350,000 square foot office and lab space, and that building is completely leased. And one of the things we needed to do was really work with the site to make sure that the building amenities are what they are. So they have this Quorum Cafe on the ground floor, this access that it's completely open to the public. And so the ability to do that means that on the backside, we have to, like you said, we have to be really careful about how those back of house spaces kind of get worked in so that they function at a high level, but we don't give them prime real estate because the prime real estate needs to be for the people that are coming in off the street. We're starting a second project now, and the same kind of situation. This one's going to have a little bit of underground parking and space. We're talking about space for bicycles and space for electric vehicles and how this building is going to be sustainable, because the first one was LEED Gold. The second one's also going to be LEED Gold building as well. So these projects are changing the landscape over there. We're going to see so much more foot traffic, and we're changing the skylines, literally. And so that requires that we're constantly trying to figure out how to get the developers' constant evolving needs in those drawings in terms of amenities, in terms of technology, in terms of aesthetics and materials, things that their tenants are looking for.
Thank you. David?
Yeah, we're asked all the time by developers of particular sites we're interested in to look at a site, give them an inspiration for what could go there based on a program that's been discussed. What's the zoning going to allow us to do? What's the FAR massing? How would it lay out? And what would it look like? That's kind of the first step for us. So that's very, very conceptual work, which we love to do, and we work very closely with the developer on the vision and the target market for those projects. I think most of our work is downtown in the Center City area, where there's lots of complicated logistics, traffic flow, trash handling, loading, parking, which really all needs to be below grade today. So those are complexities that happen in an urban area. We are seeing more and more interest in overbuilds. We've done some overbuilds. We did the Beacon at 16th and Walnut, which is an overbuild on a 14 stories on a six-story building. I think because of real estate demands, I think there's going to be opportunities to do overbuilds downtown that are sensitive to the historic fabric, but make those properties more valuable at the same time.
Thank you. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. I'm going to start with you, Anoush, because My question is, you're obviously an independent developer doing numerous different projects at any given time. So I'm wondering how you decide a neighborhood is hot or is going to be hot to put your investment in. Because obviously the stakes are high. It's got to sell. And you're the one signed on the dotted line. So tell me how you decide, and we'll go around the panel, but I want to start with you. How do you decide this is a neighbor that is worth investing in?
Good question. So for us, we look at the amenities. So in order to attract potential tenants, you need to have amenities, and especially when you're, you know, 15 to 20 minute commute to Center City, it's important that the neighborhood has a good commercial corridor. So for example, Brewery Town, they upzone Girard Avenue, which allows developers to put more density. So it allows them to kind of take a lower rent on the retail space and kind of make up for it in the apartments above. And that allows to have like cooler, like I guess breweries and like, you know, a gaming lounge, like things that are gonna attract potential tenants. So first thing is obviously it has to be with amenities. Second has to be access to public transportation or highways. Again, Brewery Town has a really great trolley and bus system. It's also very close to I-76. So for commuters to get to like Conshohocken or KOP, it's very easy. Another thing that we look for is kind of like an anchor project. Since we're not the, you know, we're a smaller scale development firm, we're looking for like a larger anchor project that's bringing those amenities and bringing those tenants and potential residents to the neighborhood.
That's great, thank you. Charles, please.
Sure. So, you know, I think transportation links are critical, really understanding the fundamentals of the area. We're of course pretty much focused on center cities, whether it's in Philadelphia and Los Angeles and Boston, so we're always going to be in a downtown location. I think the other thing we're looking for is transformation, right? What else is going on? Like, we've got a project in DC very near the new soccer stadium is going on. So, you know, big investments that are happening already, whether it's public infrastructure or the like, are driving our change. And, you know, and our view is, again, not a five-year view. It's about looking, what's this going to be like in 15, 20 years?
Great. Richard, please.
So we're not looking at deals on a developer basis, but we are realizing where the trends are going. And one of the things that we just finished is a mosque up in North Philly on North Broad Street, right on Glenwood Avenue behind the Joe Frazier Gym. Buildings like that create opportunities that become catalysts for real estate development, for housing. Just like a church, just like a synagogue, members of that community are going to want to live near that place of worship. And so I think that that's going to become a great opportunity for redevelopment, for revitalization of that area that really, really needs it. So that's one of the areas that I see. We've been working in West Philly also, and I purchased a building for our own office. So I'm dabbled in the developer world, and man, it's tough. So I appreciate what developers do a little bit more now after going through this process. And so it's on a Baltimore Avenue, which is a commercial corridor, and there's a lot of exciting things happening over there. So I love that part of the neighborhood, and I feel that there's a lot of potential moving further west as well.
David, please.
So obviously we're not developers. I think that the most successful developers we see are the ones who do know the trends and can spot trends before everybody else does. So they seem to be in the right place at the right time. I think as designers and architects, we are students of what's happening in the world. So we're watching other projects around the world, which is easy to do, obviously, today because of websites. Watching what's happening in other cities and getting ideas and inspiration for our projects here in Philadelphia. Certain projects spawn development, like Charles' project. Your project will spawn a tremendous amount of development because it's so large, and it'll be a magnet for people. Where I think hotels are really a great project, and there's so many hotel projects in Philadelphia right now. We have four hotels underway that are bringing people to Philadelphia, creating lots of jobs. That just shows you that there's so much excitement about travelers coming to Philadelphia that can support these new hotel projects. They will also, in addition to creating jobs, they will also be attractions to people to come to Philadelphia.
Shalimar.
On my speaking points, I literally have just listened to the developers and taking that and taking the feedback so I can use it in our speaking points as I position North Broad.
Well, let me ask you, that's a great question. I want to follow up on that one. So how do you, and actually this also follows up on David's point too, how do you stay abreast or ahead of the curve in terms of trends that are in certain areas, what areas are becoming hot? As David mentioned, you know, staying that information, being ahead of the curve, knowing what's going on, how do you get that information and then transport it to North Broad or wherever else your clients or you as developers may be looking? Is it just seat of the pants, you know, oh, I heard from someone else, they're doing this, it's kind of neat, or I saw a picture on the internet of a great looking building, I want to transport in North Broad Street or somewhere else, or is there much more thought and research that goes into that?
Yeah, our hashtag for North Broad Renaissance is Think Broad, and it's like, it's a play on words, but it also reminds me to think beyond what's going on, and I think North Broad is in a very privileged position in that aspect. What I try to do is look at best practices and look at what's going on somewhere else and see how we can make it better and see where's the opportunity for us to take that best practice and level it up.
Sure. David, what do you do to try and bring that edge of the market, ahead of the market, so you can bring it to your clients?
Well, that's so exciting. That's what we love to do. Our clients ask us to think outside the box. They ask us for fresh ideas all the time, and that's what we like, because we love to be a leader in the industry and help them be successful. So every project, the next project, we're trying to do something different each and every time. And we're students of what's happening in the world in terms of urban development, residential and hotel development. So I think we're helping our clients visualize what's possible, and we love to come up with creative ideas that maybe haven't been done before that become draws for that project.
Rich, please.
Similar to Dave's comments, we're architects, and what we are doing is constantly researching and constantly looking at what's happening elsewhere throughout the world, throughout the country, and looking at new technologies, getting inspired by new technologies and old technologies that are useful. And we couple that with what our clients are looking for, and we try to find their pain points and find what the solution is to their problem, and we're constantly being creative, and that's what we get up for every day, to be creative and to find a solution to their problems. So how we do that is just a trial and error and just looking around to see how we can make the last project better. Kind of what you said.
Charles, how do you stay ahead? What's your competitive edge?
You know, I think a lot of it's talking to guys like Richard, David.
They're going to see their pants. That's really troubling.
Yeah, well, you know, but they've got the ideas, right? And they're working with other developers, and sometimes you can learn a little bit about from what they're doing. Data's huge for us. We've got to understand, apartment chunk rates. We've got to understand what others are getting for rents in the market. So we're constantly on the databases, on CoStar, working with our partners who've got access to that data from the Philly market and other markets around the country. And so, you know, take in and process a tremendous amount of data when we're putting a model together and trying to make some decisions. We're also trying to look at trends, like David mentioned, modular, seeing what's happening in construction and how we can kind of like trim some of the fat on a project is incredibly important. So looking at some of these new trends and new technologies outside of what is tried and true is really important to us.
Great. Anoush, please.
Yeah, just to follow up on Charles' point, you know, we're definitely looking at the data. We're also not just looking at CoStar, but we also look at construction activity. So we're looking at the LNI permits. We're seeing what sort of construction for new construction permits are being issued in the area. Another thing that I like to do is just walk the neighborhood and just kind of get a sense of it and kind of feel out each block and see kind of what's going on and where things are trending towards. Another big thing is to look at what buyers are buying in that neighborhood as far as are there cash, you know, if it's a lot of cash sales occurring and the same group of LLCs, you can kind of track down who's behind those LLCs. You could see if that's, you know, another developer who's been successful in kind of spotting trends, and you can kind of, piggyback off some of their insights.
Well, I know I have to leave a few minutes for questions of the audience, but I want to ask one more question before I do that, because I can't help myself. We're all talking about data and cross-sections of information. So I want you to put your cap on, your future cap, and tell me, what is the next emerging hot area? I know what Shalimar is going to say, but everybody else, for the next 18 months, what is going to emerge in the Philadelphia market? Anish, please.
I really feel like the neighborhoods right around University City, so Mantua, Belmont, West Palatine Village are really going through some exciting changes, and there's some large anchor projects that are being brought to those markets. And I think Lancaster Avenue is like the perfect retail corridor, and there's a lot of potential in that corridor for amenities. And you have all the schools, and you have all the employment around there. So I think that's where I see a lot of opportunity going forward.
Thank you. Charles.
You know, I had a second one Anush said, but then I'll go on to my point. But you know, it's funny, we spent the weekend with a few developers, and we were all talking about West Philly and North Broad and just what the potential is there. So completely second, I think that they got bright futures. But for me, it's maybe not a neighborhood, but it's more about the what I'm really thinking about is apartments, right? And the changing nature of apartments. It's interesting to see co-living coming to Philadelphia, and I think there's a transformation there, and I think that that we're going to see the way people interface and use apartments change over the next 5 to 10 years.
Rich.
On a broad scale, I'd say opportunity zones. There's a lot of talk about what they are, how to capitalize on that. And I think it's going to be interesting to see those projects come to line where those opportunity zones are mapped out. On a smaller scale, I think I'm a little biased because I am in West Philly. So I do think that there's a lot of potential in West Philly, especially on the Market Street corridor going from west of the Science Center out to 46th Street and beyond. I think there's that corridor has a tremendous amount of potential, and it'll be interesting to see how that happens. But opportunity zones.
Good to hear. David, please.
It's a tough question because there seems to be growth everywhere. You know, the we're doing a lot of work downtown, but we have a project in Callow Hill we're working on. It's 150 apartments. We have a project in West Philadelphia and Chestnut that's just starting up, also apartments. Those are you know, different construction types because they're stick built. They're seven stories and less. I think there's a big market that we're excited about in Center City, Philadelphia, is repurposing existing buildings. We've been working on the Curtis Center conversion into luxury residential, as an example. A lot of great old buildings can be repurposed for new and modern uses, and there's a lot of buildings still available to do that. We have clients coming to us from out of town looking to repurpose buildings, in part because they think it'll be less expensive than doing a new build. So we should focus on our building stock in the core, make sure we're using it all to the best way possible.
Shalimar, maybe I can tweak the question a tiny bit for you and ask, how do you make sure North Broad is the hot place for the next 18 to 24 months?
North Broad right now is super exciting, and the development that's taking place on North Broad is super, super exciting. And I said this before, I think it's because we're in a very privileged position to not just do development as normal, but see what's going on as it relates to development, and then see how we can take it to the next level and change the game around development. And one of the things that we're working on right now from a proposed standpoint is looking at the, creating business districts along North Broad and having the arts and culture district and the tech district, because we cover 4 miles, we cover 8 neighborhoods, a health district and a professional service district. And the idea behind that is to strategically attract businesses. So as development takes place, developers are going to need to fill this space with tenants and commercial tenants. How can we be strategic now in this early stages to get the right businesses in the right area so that we can support the current culture on North Broad, but also support inclusive job development from low-skilled all the way to high-skilled residents? So.
Well, thank you. These are great answers. I really appreciate everyone's insight and time this morning. I did save a few minutes because I was told I had to for questions. Anybody have a question? I'm going to start with John over there. John Finley, go ahead, please. Oh, it's a microphone.
Richard and I had a conversation earlier today about where interest rates are, and as we all know, months ago, everyone was so concerned about the interest rates going above 3%. Well, now they're below 2.5%. My question is, everyone talks about saturation of multifamily. And most of you have said, depends where the location, the offer, everything going on around it. Is there still room for multifamily?
Is there still room for multifamily? Who would like to tackle that one first?
I'm going to say yes, undoubtedly.
Anyone else want to try it? Charles?
Yeah.
And then David?
I think there is too. I think it's, you know, you don't want to build the commodity apartment anymore, at least in Center City. I think there's a lot of different things going on, whether it's a senior living, whether it's doing larger apartments, whether it's going the opposite direction, going to micro units to cater to this eds and meds. But I think you've got to get creative to make these projects pencil in 2019.
David, please.
Yeah, it seems to be a trend that smaller units with maxed out amenities is a lot of what we are seeing today, where it's about a lifestyle. It's about full service concierge living. I don't have to do anything. They bring up my cars brought up, or my groceries are brought up, or you know, I don't have to leave the building, so to speak. My community is the building. That seems to be, at least in our work, that's been prime. If the money is there, if the credit's available, I think we'll continue to see more and more apartment development, I guess. So that's good to hear, because if it's not available, we're all...
He has it on him.
He's got a bag of money.
See that man for some money.
$80 million at 2.5%.
You know, just on the residential side, we have a couple of projects now that are condos. So I guess that's that may be another trend, and I don't know if anybody else knows more about that than I do, but we are seeing condo development happening on the luxury end, which is great, and it struggled before in Philadelphia, as I recall, but it seems like that's now becoming a new movement.
Thank you. Any other comments to that question?
I think that there is a... that there's, in addition to all the analytics that people are talking about, there's a perception of optimism that continues to grow in Philadelphia. The city neighborhoods are opening up, and people are discovering that they can live in North Philly, that they can live on North Broad, that they can live in South Broad, that can live in Kensington and farther west of University City to Copps Creek. And so all of these neighborhoods have always been there, but are now being rediscovered. And I think that there are opportunities in all of those neighborhoods, not just Center City. Center City is great, but there are all these other neighborhoods that people are having a perception shift about, oh, I can live out there, that's perfectly fine. And you're near the trolley line, or you're near the subway line, or you're near a bus line. And those places really, really have the elements that allow for the city to continue to grow.
Great, thank you. Another question, so back there, please. Smart buildings and tech buildings, how to increase their popularity in the city here? Anyone want to tackle, please?
Yeah, so we are working with a company out in East Falls called Stratus. And what Stratus does is they essentially, they're an Internet of Things company. So all like your thermostats, your lighting, your unit entry, your building entry is all controlled through one app. And that kind of creates like a seamless experience for the tenants. And it's really not that costly of an upgrade to add to a building. And I feel like today you might be able to charge a little bit more in rent and or get better absorption on your initial lease up. But I feel like in the future, this is gonna become a standard.
Great, any other comments on that one, development?
I think you all know that the zoning code gives you quite a few bonuses for doing green architecture, sustainable design, which is about energy savings and protecting the planet. We can produce buildings today that produce positive energy. It does cost more, but I think in time that technology will become more affordable and buildings can actually produce excess energy.
Great.
Salmer. Actually, I appreciate the question on smart technology because it's something that we've been looking at. Just beyond apartment buildings, but how can we incorporate smart technology into the corridors? So, for example, if there's someone hiring on the corridor, how can someone get an alert on their phone just from being in the area to say that, you know, such and such, the Met is hiring, or, you know, this new development is taking place and these are the positions. And so how can we think broadly about, pun intended, about how we use smart technology even as it relates to community development?
Great, thank you. Question back there, please. Please, Charles.
So I think a trend we're seeing is people returning from the suburbs, and I think that's fantastic to see that people are coming back in from the main line, and when the kids go to college, they're coming back to live in the city again. So we're seeing a market there to develop larger 2-3 bedroom apartments in our buildings for them to come back and live in. People want to be close to the arts and culture. They want to be close to hospitals. And
that's a pick me up, but thank you. Real pick me up, thanks, Charles.
But I think that, you know, so developing for that market's an emerging trend.
Great, Rich.
So I think in addition to empty nesters and people moving back into the city, you're also seeing a lot of people that want to age in place. So they want to have a house that, if it has stairs, maybe now it's going to have an elevator. If it has a porch, maybe that porch is not a half a flight above the ground level. And so all of these amenities, a bathroom that they can kind of walk into and have grab bars be added to later on. These are things that are like details that allow for quality of life to happen without people like are your age and my age that are like in 15, 20 years thinking, I don't want to go to a retirement home. I just want to live where I'm living now, kind of a thing. And so whether it's a high rise with amenities and all of these features that allow you to kind of be able to age in place, whether and not have to climb stairs, or retrofitting existing older houses, which we have a lot of, those are trends that I think people are going to see. And people that are revitalizing these older buildings may take those as opportunities or as cues to take those neighborhoods again and be able to make those buildings more attractive for people to stay in them.
David,
yeah, just briefly, I agree with all that was said. I think people do want to live downtown because of the conveniences, the culture, and the medical care that's here. And it's a lifestyle change for them. They don't have to take care of a house, worry about mulch and lawns and things like that. And they probably want to be with like-minded people of the same age. So we have a project, I can't announce it, but we're looking at a stratified layout where it's based on age groups. You know, you're gonna cater to an older generation and a younger generation in one building, but you're collectively grouped.
Fair enough.
The conversation around Generation X and retirement, it sounds a little sad from a development standpoint. So I would just like to add, you know, how, you know, think about how you're bringing amenities. You know, just because you're older doesn't necessarily mean you don't want to take the steps, or you don't want to stay active, or you don't want to go out and explore, you know, but you want it to be convenient, I think. And so you don't have to travel to Center City to get it. You can just travel right in any community. You can go right outside your door and have access to it. So
fair enough, thank you. I think we have time for one last question. Please, go right ahead.
So this is a little circuitous, but I want to ask it anyway. So I lived in West Philadelphia for 16 years, and I found one of the drivers of development was the Penn Alexander School. That Penn put a lot of money in that school, and a lot of people wanted to move there because there are people who want to live in the city, but they have nowhere to send their kids to school. So I'm wondering, especially for Shalmore,
question has to do with education and whether any of the developers or consultants or Shalimar in her role as well, Special
yeah.
Service District, works with local schools to try and help incentivize, improve, and draw people.
I think you have an excellent point, because a lot of times we hear that people may not move into a certain neighborhood because the school in the area is not good. So number one, you made me think about doing some research on that and seeing how we can engage the schools in that way. But I think the other piece to that conversation is there was a story that I heard in South Philly where the parents just got involved in the school to change the dynamics of the school. So even though the school may have not been the best, when they created this community, the community also included getting involved in the schools so that the school was held to more higher standards and held more accountable.
Great question. Rich.
Yeah, that's a huge question, and it could be a whole day discussion about how the schools in Philadelphia affect the people that are here, because a lot of people move into the city. Then when they get married and start having kids, they move out of the city. And so the success story that Penn Alexander created should be something that is replicated all over the city so that everybody has that type of quality of school building and amenities and community that really supports that school. In our work, we've done a lot of school district projects, and we see the schools that are strong have a strong community around them. Personally, I benefited from buying a house in that catchment zone before the catchment zone was created, and we just lucked out because I thought, well, it's a nice block. It should be in the catchment zone, and you see the map, and it zigzags around, and we made it in, and my two sons are products of the school district because of that, and my one son's right here, in fact. He's interested in real estate, so he's checking this out. Yeah. So we need to figure out how to replicate that Penn Alexander problem throughout the city. And it's a problem because it creates haves and have-nots. And if we could figure that out, I think that the city would be tremendously in better shape.
Any other comments to that one? Please.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I've got a little bit of an anecdote from when I did a project in New York City about 14 years ago. And the development site next door ended up was slated to be a New York City public school. And what we were really surprised at, we always thought the public school was gonna be a great amenity for the neighborhood. It was down in Battery Park City. But what we didn't understand was just the how, you know, the gravity of the impact, right? In the apartment building we developed, everyone really saw that school as a huge amenity. And at the end of the day, we had 140 apartments, and we had more than 150 kids ultimately living in that building. So just about everyone in that building who took an apartment saw that school as an amenity and sent their kids to that school. So I think new schools, schools in the neighborhoods are a huge, could be a huge benefit.
Great point, great story. Well, I think at this point I'm gonna have to wrap it up, but I know our panel's gonna stick around for a few minutes, can answer any questions that you may have afterwards if you wanna come up and chat with them. But I wanna thank everyone for being here, and I wanna thank this panel for the fantastic job. They're really great. So. And thank you all for participating in today's event. Appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. For the latest commercial real estate news, visit globestreet.com. And for more information on the Philadelphia Center City Proprietors Association, visit centercityproprietors.org. We also welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email me at steve@statebroadcastnews.com. We produce this program in the studios of State Broadcast News in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. For everyone at GlobeStreet.com and ALM Real Estate Media, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.